Earth and Sky.
When we look up on the night sky, essentially every star you see, most of them are solar-type stars. The stars which are like the mass of the sun, or perhaps a factor of two or so times less massive, we already know that they probably have Earth-like planets.
You're listening to astronomer Alan Boss of the Carnegie Institution of Washington, and this is Earth Sky's Clear Voices for Science. Boss talked about answering the question, are we alone in the universe, with Earth Sky's Jorge Salazar at a science meeting.
Dr. Boss, welcome to Earth Sky's Clear Voices for Science.
Thank you very much, Jorge.
What's new in the search for living planets beyond Earth?
I think we're on the verge of finding out just how many Earth-like planets there are in the universe. And there are already clear indications that such Earth-like planets are going to be quite common. That is, Earth-like planets probably occur around essentially every solar-type star, or very close to that. That's a pretty wild-eyed prediction, I must say, of course, to say planets are so common. But that prediction is about to be tested. There is a new spacecraft, and that mission, Kepler, is designed exactly to answer that question of how frequently Earth-like planets are. And we will know about 3.5 years after Kepler launches the answer. Are Earth-like planets around 1% of stars, around 10% of stars, or around essentially 100% of stars?
Would you like to maybe briefly describe to us what Kepler is doing?
Kepler will be on a so-called Earth-trailing orbit, so it will be in orbit around the sun and slowly moving away from the Earth, so it keeps out of the Earth's shadow and blocking effects. And so Kepler will be a transit photometry satellite. It will be staring at 100,000 stars in the field of Cygnus, or near Lyra, the constellations Cygnus and Lyra. It'll stare at those 100,000-plus stars for roughly 3.5 years, looking for the periodic dimmings of those stars that are caused by Earth-like planets that happen to have their orbits aligned, such that the planet passes in front of the star as viewed from Kepler, so that there is a tiny dimming of the star. That tiny dimming is so small, it's roughly 1 part in 10,000, that it cannot be measured from ground-based observatories. That's why we have to have Kepler up in space, measuring it from space where there's no atmospheric noise introduced into the measuring process.
Now, you said earlier today to the media that many habitable Earth-like planets might, in a sense, stud space beyond our solar system. Yet, one really hasn't been found yet, for sure, as of today, in early 2009. What are your thoughts on this discrepancy here?
Well, what's already been found, though, is incredibly encouraging. The estimates are that nearby stars, which have been searched for more massive planets, they've already begun to reveal that roughly 1/3 of such nearby stars, which are solar-type stars, have what are called super-Earths, planets with masses maybe 5 to 10 times the mass of the Earth, and moving on orbits that they're closer to their stars, so they might be a little bit warmer or hotter than the Earth is, or quite a bit hotter or warmer. And so these are the easiest ones to find. We don't really quite have the ability yet to find Earth-like planets, which Kepler will give us. But the fact that even with our existing techniques, as primitive as they are, we are already finding that roughly 1/3 of nearby stars have these objects which are probably quite terrestrial-like. They probably form in the same way that Earth and Venus form. They just happen to be a little bit more massive, a little bit closer to their star. Finding that these super-Earths are already so abundant makes it quite clear to me, at least, that we're probably going to find just hordes and hordes of more normal terrestrial Earth-like planets.
Yeah, I think earlier today you said that that there was a one-to-one correspondence here between stars in the galaxies.
Yeah, okay.
And the likelihood that there's a habitable planet. Clear this up for us, please.
Well, when we look up on the night sky, essentially every star you see, most of them are solar-type stars. Some of them are a bit more massive than that, so not all such stars. We're not sure if the more massive stars are going to have Earth-like planets, but the stars which are like the mass of the sun, or perhaps a factor of two or so times less massive, we already know that they probably have Earth-like planets because of what's already been seen for the super-Earths. And so they're roughly on the order of 100 billion stars like that in our galaxy. And so that roughly means that there should be roughly 100 billion Earth-like worlds in our galaxy. To really compound that by quite a bit, we know from images like the Hubble Deep Field and Hubble Ultra Deep Field that the number of galaxies in the universe that we can actually see is roughly equivalent to the number of stars in our own galaxy. So that's another 100 billion galaxies out there, each of which presumably has stars much like our own galaxy and have the same physics and chemistry is operating there, making the same sorts of planets. So we expect those galaxies to have planets just like our solar system does. So you're now talking about 100 billion times 100 billion. That's a factor of 10 to the 22 in scientific notation. That's probably a good estimate for how many habitable worlds exist in the universe. The universe is a crowded place.
And I guess one reason possibly why scientists haven't found one yet is because they're so far away. So.
It's not for lack of trying. Scientists have been trying to find all sorts of planets for a good 40-odd years. We're only now a little bit over 10 years into actually being able to find planets by a variety of methods. And the methods we have available to us now, namely Doppler spectroscopy, microlensing, and transits, they work pretty well for gas giant planets. They even work quite well for finding ice giants like Uranus and Neptune. And they're doing quite well at finding the so-called super-Earths, objects with masses of 5 to 10 times the mass of Earth. But we're not quite able to, with any of these techniques, except for perhaps microlensing, which hasn't yet to do it, we're not quite able to find an Earth mass planet orbiting at an Earth-like distance.
You know, times are tough here in the U.S. economically. What would you like to tell people, mom and dad listening, people are listening, as to why they should support scientists' search for life beyond Earth?
I think the fact that we're trying to answer one of the most basic questions is what motivates this field. We're trying to answer the question, are we alone in the universe? Simply finding Jupiter-like planets is wonderful science, but it doesn't perhaps tell us too much about life. But we want to go beyond the Jupiters. We want to go beyond the ice giants. We want to find Earth-like planets. And I think that's something everyone wants to know the answer for. And while the costs of any individual space telescope might seem rather prohibitive, on the scale of dividing that by the population of the Earth, you're talking about, you know, less than a dollar per person. Right? There are, what, something like 6 to 8 billion people, I think, on the Earth. For 50 cents a person, we can build a wonderful space telescope. So from that point of view, could you get all the people of the Earth to agree to spend 50 cents to find an Earth-like planet? I think that's a bargain.
Last question here. What is the most important thing that you'd like people to know about the search for life beyond Earth?
I think what people should realize is that we're about to find the answer to long-awaited questions like, are we alone? When Kepler can tell us for the first time how frequently Earth-like planets are, we're going to be motivated to take the next steps to build a space telescope that can actually go out and find nearby Earths and see if there are molecules in its atmosphere which are indicative of having life. We'll also, of course, strongly motivate the folks who are looking for signals from other civilizations, the search for extraterrestrial intelligence folks, the SETI folks. The fact that we're now finding this evidence for planets everywhere has got to embolden them in their own search and embolden them in doing their search better, building bigger arrays, doing their searches across other radio wavelengths. Who knows what they'll find?
You've been listening to astronomer Alan Boss of the Carnegie Institution of Washington. He spoke with Earth Skies Jorge Salazar at a meeting of the American Association for the Advancement of Science. Boss's new book is called The Crowded Universe, The Search for Living Planets. To subscribe to this and other free science podcasts, visit the subscribe page at earthsky.org. I'm Deborah Bird, and you're listening to Earth Skies, Clear Voices for Science.
We're at earthsky.org.